Okay, good evening. So, in anticipation of reading Parshas Bereishis this week, and coming off the heels of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, Shmini Atzeres, I thought it was an appropriate time to continue the theme of tshuva that occupied us so greatly over these weeks, and is really a very dominant theme in a lot of ways in Parshas Bereishis. So to create a connection between everything of these past few weeks and Parshas Bereishis is illuminating and helpful. So I thought we'd look at some of the themes of tshuva that are kind of planted throughout this parsha, that come up in a number of places. Really throughout, we find themes of tshuva and many lessons about tshuva. So one of the most striking psukim that relates to this whole concept in many ways is a pasuk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Cain, really before his big avera, that when Cain is upset about the fact that his korban is not well received, is not as well received as his brothers, or is not well received at all. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to him and he says, why is it that you seem so depressed? And don't you know that halo imtetiv se'es, that if you'll do better, if you shall be good, so then something will happen. That word is translated in various ways, se'es. Rashi translates it as you'll be forgiven. V'im lo se'tiv, if not, so then you can follow your path, l'pesach atas ravetz. There is sin available, that's at the door for you. And ve'elech teshukaso, and it's going to go after you. It's going to always be your problem. Ve'ata timshobo, but you can overcome it. You can conquer it. So this pasuk is the source of much commentary, as you could imagine, and many different interpretations. But just off the bat, it seems essentially like this is the chiyuv of tshuva here, that the Kadosh Baruch Hu is saying that, listen, you have an option. Either you can choose the good path or the bad path, and that's your obligation to recognize that you should do tshuva. So the directive of tshuva, the mandate of tshuva, seems to be included in that pasuk. Now, as you mentioned, there are many, many interpretations of that pasuk, and the additional interpretations also point to different aspects of the mitzvah and the process of tshuva. A number of these are pointed out. There's a very fascinating sefer called Ma'aris Yitzchak on Sefer Bereishis, two volumes on Sefer Bereishis, written by Talmud Chacham, who I'm acquainted with, by the name of Rabbi Yitzchak Edeltalk. And he notes, among other artists that we'll make reference to, that there are various steps that can, various chidushim that can be derived from this pasuk alone. And in addition to a mandate to do tshuva, there is also the idea that tshuva works, that tshuva accomplishes something. And that's also what Rashi is telling us when he says that there'll be forgiveness if you do tshuva. So that's not so obvious, that's a chiddush. The Yerushalmi in Maseches Makos relates a whole story about how various midos and entities were asked about what should be the fate of the sinner. And almost all of them thought he should die. Chachma thought that the sinner should die. And Nevuah thought that the Chote should die. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the one who said, Yasta tshuva v'yiskaper, that he can do tshuva and he will be forgiven, he will receive atonement. So that's apparently a chiddush. That's the point that the Gemara is saying, that these other systems, the system of wisdom, the system of prophecy, to them tshuva doesn't seem to make any sense. The idea that one can repent and be forgiven, that's not something that seems to make sense in the natural world. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who says there's a possibility of tshuva. So that's a chiddush, that's a new idea, but that's perhaps also being conveyed here, that imtetiv, if you will get better, if you will act better, so then you're going to be forgiven. What also perhaps is being reflected here is that there is the possibility and the need for tshuva on midos. And that's an interesting point in general. So we could look at tshuva on midos as a part of the process of how you do tshuva for averos, the idea of trying to uproot what caused the avera. Is also a chiddush for the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, who writes that the obligation of tshuva is not just on actions, is not just on averis that you committed, but it's also on midos ros. So here, this idea of saying that you should get better, so essentially that's also what seems to be conveyed here, and it's also discussed in the Ma'ariv Yitzchak, that essentially Cain is being told that, okay, right now you feel very angry and upset and rejected, and you feel like you're wronged, but you have to work to correct that as part of the process of tshuva. And he makes reference there to the often quoted comment of the Sefer Achinuch, where he writes that this was in the context of the Isser of breaking a bone during the Korban Pesach, during the eating of the Korban Pesach. And the Sefer Achinuch has a comment there that Acharei HaPu'ulos Nimshachim HaLavavos, that one's hearts, one's midos, one's attributes are directed by one's actions. The more you do good things, the more it affects you positively, it transforms you, and so too the other way around. So therefore, you're getting the message here that there's a possibility. You can't just say that I'm stuck with this kind of personality and it's just the way I am. No, you can do positive things and it's possible for you to get better. You could also maintain that a part of the message here of Seis is that you should make new decisions, that you should decide to do better. And there's also a message contained here as well, that if you don't do tshuva, it's not just that you stay in the same negative place, but things get worse. And the Shari Tshuva, Rabbeinu Yonah actually writes in the Shari Tshuva in the beginning, in the first Shari, where he goes through all the steps of tshuva. So in Siman Lamed Ches, he writes there that that's what the Pasuk means when it says, L'pesach atas raveitz. It means that if you're not going to do better, so you're not just going to stay in the same place, but their sin and the Yitzhahara is waiting for you. It's just going to increase. And the Ma'ariv Yitzchak writes on those lines that it could also mean, what we see from Cain, is that it's not just that you sin more, but the Midah turns into the Avera. So it's arguable that at that point, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is addressing him this way, he hasn't actually committed any Averas yet. He just has this feeling that he is entitled to better treatment, and that is what antagonizes him. But because he doesn't work to fix this, and that's unfortunately what happens there, we see that he gets this message and yet he doesn't do anything to address it, and then he ends up committing murder. So that midah turns into a chait, turns into an avera, and perhaps that's also what's being suggested here. Further, there's also the midah of Kabbalah al Ha'asid. The idea that when you want to do tshuva, so you have to also commit to changing your ways. And that's also included in this pasuk, and especially the implications here again, that imtativ, that if you're going to get better, if you're going to do things more properly from here on in, okay, so then, seis, then you'll be forgiven. But if not, then apparently not just the things will get worse, but also there won't be a kapara. So that seems to be contingent on the idea that you're doing better from here on in. So that's the notion of Kabbalah Halasid. The Sfarno has an interpretation of Seis, which could mean this or could mean something else, that he says, lift up. The language of Seis mean to look up, to look to the heights. So it could mean, again, to aspire to better things. So that perhaps is a commitment, again, a Kabbalah Ha'asid. Or also that this is referring to an idea that one shouldn't think that he has no hope, one shouldn't despair. And that's also a part of the message here. And this is something also the Ma'ariv Yitzchak emphasizes, that here HaKadosh Baruch Hu was also saying to Cain, Lama Yechar, why you look so despondent? Why do you look so upset? There's hope. So apparently a part of the message is that you're not supposed to be so despondent, and you're supposed to recognize that you have hope. And otherwise, again, it's going to continue into Avera. It's also going to bring you into a path where you think there isn't any possibility of you doing anything better. This is evocative of the idea We have in Parshas Kisavo, so we read about Vidui. The Torah doesn't use that word, but Chazal used that word there, that the statement that's there in the second Aliyah of Kisavo is called Vidui Meiser. And everyone asks that what's described there regarding the Meiseris is not a confessional. You say, Lo varti mitzvosecha v'lo shachachti, that I haven't done anything wrong, I did everything perfectly. And it's possible to understand the reason that's called a vidui is because just like you sometimes have to confess your averus in order to move yourself towards tshuva, you also have to acknowledge the possibility that you are capable of doing better. And that's what sometimes holds us back in the other direction, not that we think we're perfect, but we think we're terrible and there's no hope. So therefore you have to emphasize that yes, there is hope and that you can't despair. And that's also a part of the message here. So to move away for a moment from that pasuk and to talk about some themes that are elsewhere in the parsha as far as tshuva and that whole process. So it's a little bit depressing and maybe discouraging to read this parsha after Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, when we spent so much time pursuing tshuva, and to get the message that apparently tshuva doesn't work. It's what it seems like, because Adam HaRishon is evicted, is expelled from the Gan, and he loses his immortality. And yet, he apparently did tshuva. It's what Chazal tell us in a number of places, the Gemara in Erevin, and Daf Yud Ches Amud Beis, and it's a Pirkei Belozer, and it's a Zohar, that Adam did tshuva. So, if that's the case, so then why doesn't he get to go back, and why doesn't he get to have his immortality back? So this is something that Mefarshim have discussed for many centuries. It's clearly a very blatant issue. The Drasha Saran, in his first Drasha, so he writes that it's not an onesh. This idea that he's losing his immortal Gan Eden status is just a direct consequence of the fact that he has eaten from the Eitz Hadas. So he's different now, and simply doesn't fit anymore the old description and the old plan, but it's not b'toris onesh, so the idea that tshuva doesn't reverse it is not necessarily such a chiddush, or not necessarily such a surprise. And it's interesting, you say this is discouraging to read this after Sukkot, but we have it on both ends, because before Rosh Hashanah we read Hazinu, which makes reference to Moshe Rabbeinu, seemingly giving us the same concern, that Moshe Rabbeinu is held back from entering in the land because of his misstep, and he's davening and he's asking for forgiveness to such an extreme extent, and it doesn't change anything. So we have right before these Yamim Tovim and right after what seems to be discouraging messages about the power of tshuva. So it's possible in both cases to say that it's not necessarily an onesh per se, but that there's just a new reality. Maybe Moshe was not anymore in a position to be able to lead the Jewish people to the next stage. And here as well, Adam is not able to be the same person who is going to be a immortal resident of Gan Eden. In the Shev Shmaisa, the Hakdama to the Shev Shmaisa, he has it in a different way, that he quotes from the Arizal, that yes, Adam did tshuva, but tshuva means essentially that you are remaking yourself. So now this new status that he has is man-made, and it's not something that's going to necessarily be able to last and be able to have that kind of endurance. So whether you say it like that or you say it a different way, what you essentially have is that it's possible to say it's not b'toris onesh that he has this new status and this new situation, but it's reflective of the fact that the aveira had an impact. And therefore, things are different. So he ate from the Eitz Hadas, and now he's a different kind of entity. And the challenges are different, for better or for worse. However we see it, the challenges are different. And that's a part of the process of tshuva. One of the steps that Rabbeinu Yonah writes is that tshuva requires shehei cheto k'negdo tamid, that one's avera has to always be in front of him, and that you have to do vidu even on things from past years. So one might think that that's just depressing, that why should you have to constantly feel bad about things that are long in the past? And perhaps it's there in order to keep you from doing it again. That's a part of it. But also maybe a part of it is to acknowledge there's a new reality here and to understand that it requires a different system. And therefore to have that in mind and to understand what that requires is a part of it. And we also see from Adam HaRishon's treatment here that tshuva requires also a process of trying to correct the midos. So we find that as he is sent out of Gan Eden, he's told he has to work the land, he has to work the Adama that he came from. And Maris Yitzchak suggests over there as well that that's relevant to his tshuva process, that maybe this is because the midah of Hakar Satov, which is so crucial, and it's not just one midah among others, it's a midah that really impacts all of your decisions and all of your ability to relate to Torah and your mission in this world. And Adam was lacking in Hakar Satov. How do we know? Because when he's trying to defend himself against the accusation of eating from the Eitz Hadas, so he blames it on his wife, and he blames it on HaKadosh Baruch Hu for making the Shurich. He doesn't give him Shadchanis, but instead he goes the opposite direction. It's your fault, Aisha Asher Nasata Imadi. It's because of her. That's why I fell into this trap. And there's no Hakar Satov. That's what Chazal point out. That's an act of Kfiya Satov. And that is a much bigger problem than many other problems that really leads to a complete collapse of one's sense of responsibility. So now he has to express Hakar Satov. So he came from the Adama, so he has to take care of the Adama. The whole process of tshuva, what exactly it involves, could also suggest that that's what's going on with Cain. So Cain, after he commits this murder, so he ends up in Golos. And the nature of that as a kapara is also interesting. And what it seems to be is that essentially he committed murder. So if he committed murder, he really should be Chayiv Misa. And indeed, that's what he expresses, that he's concerned that people are going to kill him. And that reflects the fact that on some level, he does deserve that. So why is that not what's supposed to happen, at least not yet, at least not until later? And Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to protect you. So it seems like there's some level of a shogeg here, and there's a medrash that represents that idea, that Cain essentially claims that I didn't know what was going to happen. I never saw anyone get murdered before. It never happened until now. Had no idea what was going to be the result, and therefore I didn't know. So it seems like there's basically a claim of shogeg here, that he didn't understand what was going to happen. Now, shogeg has many different applications and many different versions. It's one thing if he was saying that I didn't know that I'm not allowed to murder people, so whether or not that would be a valid claim as a shogeg is a big question, whether that's true for Yisrael or Ben Noach, that that would be any kind of a credible shogeg there, that's one thing. But if he's saying also that I don't think that I didn't know that there could be death resulting from this, and there are different attitudes in Chazal, whether he was trying to kill Havel or not, but if the claim here is that I never saw anyone get murdered before, it never happened, so I didn't know what was going to take place, so then essentially, maybe this is a claim of shogeg. So there is this dual process of kapara that he needs to have, on the one hand, a kapara for the aveira that he actually did, and that ultimately is the case, and the fact that he is vulnerable to possibly being killed by anyone he meets represents that. But between now and then, the process of galus that is meant to be a kapara for a Ritzicha B'Shogeg, so that's what he's going through also. And that idea as a kapar, it's the same thing that we find when we talk about an Ir Miklat, and we talk about a Ritzicha B'Shogeg, the idea that that's a kapara. So presumably what's happening there is that the individual who is Ritzicha B'Shogeg, so if it's genuinely B'Shogeg, so the nature of his problem is not that he is looking to hurt anybody, he's not evil, But he doesn't have enough of an appreciation of human life. He doesn't have enough of a concern for the fragility and the preciousness of human life. So by going into Galus, and in the case of Ritzeach B'Shogeg has to stay in the Eir Miklat, and if he leaves, then he's going to be fair game for anyone who wants to kill him. So that causes him to have a complete reversal of that original mindset. The mindset that until now didn't care about the preciousness of life and the fragility of it. Now he's got to think about it all the time. He's got to consciously think that maybe somebody is going to come and kill me, and I have to be careful, and I have to take steps in order to prevent that. So essentially that was Cain's process also, thinking that he's going to be vulnerable to anybody who's going to come up to him, is something that reorients his mindset towards a much greater sensitivity, and that would be a kapara for this original avera that sent him into Galus in the first place. Now, regarding his whole process, so the Medrash also has a fascinating story, very mysterious story, that eventually in his wandering, he meets up with his father. He meets up with Adam, and Adam asks Cain, so what's been going on? How have things been? And Cain says that Asisi tshuva v'nispasharti imkoni, that I repented, I did tshuva, and I made peace with my Creator. And Adam HaRishon is very despoiled from that. He's amazed at that. And he then goes on to say, Mizmor Shir L'Yom HaShavuz. So what exactly does that have to do with anything? Why is he talking about Mizmor Shir L'Yom HaShavuz as a reaction to what Adam said? So that's a little mysterious. There's a Sefer Ala Torah called Minchas Aaron by Rav Aaron Miaznik. And he suggests that in general, what sometimes holds people back from tshuva is the aspect of vidui, the idea that you're going to have to confess, is what makes it hard for people to do tshuva. And it sounds like from the Rambam, when the Rambam goes through the concept of tshuva and Mishneh Torah and Hilchos Tshuva, so he focuses on vidui as the mitzvah. And apparently that's the key condition here. And vidui doesn't just mean whispering something, it means saying it in a way that really evokes embarrassment and confronting one's mistakes and recognizing what that means for him and for those around him. So therefore, vidui has to be a crucial component here, and it has to be done properly. So even though the Gemara does say that Adam did tshuva, that he fasted a lot, and that he took on great efforts in order to repent, but maybe this component of vidui, maybe Cain had it and Adam until then didn't have it. How did you see that Cain had it? Because Cain says, Gadol Avoni Mitso, that my avera is too great for me to bear. So that sounds like it's a hodah. The Gemara in Maseches Sanhedrin has a little bit of a different spin on it, where it sounds like he was saying it as a defense. He was saying it kind of bitmia, that what, I can't be forgiven, that the whole Chet Egel is going to happen in the future, and the Jews will be forgiven for that. All of them are going to be forgiven, and me, this one guy who made a mistake, I can't be forgiven. So whether it's actually a lashon of hodah or a lashon of somewhat defiance is a little bit of a question. It could be that it's both. It could be that he is acknowledging what he did, but he also thinks that he deserves to have some kind of clemency. But at least on a surface level, so it seems like he understood, or he at least participated to some extent in this idea of hodah, of vidui, and maybe Adam HaRishon hadn't yet taken that step. So then he goes on to say, Tov l'hodos l'Hashem. That's a part of his Marshal Yom HaShabbos, Tov l'hodos. So maybe that's the connection, that he comes to recognize the crucial importance of Hodah. The Rashiv of Kerbi Avner of Goldwicht, he had an essay about this where he focused on a different aspect, that Adam invoking Shabbos specifically, Mizmor Shir L'Yom HaShabbos, is relevant to tshuva. And he quotes a comment from the Beis Halevi, that the Beis Halevi explained the Medrash, is a Medrash that comments on the fact that the Pasuk, it sounds like a Kadosh Baruch Hu finished creating the world on the seventh day, even though we know from the Pesukim in the beginning of our Parsha that he created the world in 6 days, and by the seventh day he was done. So why do we see creation continuing into that? And the Medrash has the imagery of a blacksmith who is pounding his hammer. So here, the kind of malacha we're talking about is the lifting up of the hammer, as opposed to the bringing it down. So the Beis Halevi explained that there's malacha that one does that is visible, and then there is effort that one puts in that is not so visible, but it's what makes everything else happen. Without it, you wouldn't have the impact. And that's what Shabbos represents, essentially the recreation, that all the new creations happen during the week. And Shabbos is a time when everything is recreating itself in a quiet way that's not so blatant and is not so visible. So the Rosh Yeshiva suggested that what Adam was realizing was that that is what tshuva is, that tshuva requires that one do the internal avoda, that one actually transform oneself, not only in terms of behavior that is visible, but in ways that are beneath the surface, but that actually go to change the character. So essentially that's what Adam was singing about, that the avoda of Shabbos, this internal recreation that just affects what's inside, even if it's not visible outside, that essentially is the process of tshuva, and that's what he was realizing, and that's what he was singing about. There's also a whole other element here that very much also goes to themes of tshuva that we mentioned at the outset. So here, this direction to Kayin of Imtetiv says, if you're going to get better, if you're going to do better, so that's what's going to make everything work. So the Se'es, Rashi has the interpretation that it means that you will be forgiven. But it's interesting, Rashi and Kedushin interpret it differently, because the Gemara in Kedushin has a different take on the whole message there in that whole pasuk. And there the Gemara says that one should always fight against the Eitz Hara, one should always do what he has to in order to overcome the negative instincts that he has. And there the Gemara has that statement of Barasi Eitz Hara of Barasi Torah Tavlin, that God says, yes, I made the Eitz Hara, and I also made the Torah as an antidote to the Eitz Hara. So that's what you have to do. You have to fight against the Eitz Hara with Talmud Torah. And there Rashi understands Se'es as meaning that you will be lifted up above the Eitz Hara. The Eitz Hara is always trying to get you, but if you will engage in Torah study, so that will lift you up. And this is parallel to an idea that many have that is based on a comment of Rav Aaron Cutler, who was interpreting a number of Rishonim, that in Parshas Nitzavim, so the Torah says, Ki ha-mitzvah hazos lo neflesi. So what is the mitzvah that's not too wondrous? So a number of the Rishonim say it's a reference to tshuva, that tshuva is accessible and is at hand. But the Gemara in Erevin, it sounds like that pasuk is referring to Talmud Torah. So some suggest there's a conflict here. Is the Gemara telling us it's talking about Talmud Torah, and the Rishonim are saying it's talking about tshuva? So Rav Aaron Cutler was quoted in many other svarim as saying that they are sometimes the same, that Talmud Torah is a path towards tshuva, and it's a greater path towards tshuva, because the Gemara in the end of Yoma tells us that there are different levels of tshuva. There's tshuva me'yira, tshuva that's motivated by fear of onesh and the like, and that's effective on one level, that turns our averos into shkagos. But there's a greater level of tshuva, tshuva me'ava, tshuva that's motivated by love, and that turns our averus into zachios. That's able to really flip things around. And that's a pretty powerful idea. And in fact, that's also relevant to Parshas Bereishis and to Sukkos, because there is a tradition that some have, some of the Rishonim talk about, that the idea of the Esrog is meant to be a kapara for the chait of Adam HaRishon. Because Machlokas in the Gemara, what was the fruit that Adam ate? One thing we know is it definitely wasn't an apple, but there are a few other candidates, and one of them is an Esrog. So there's an idea that the Esrog is meant to be a kapara for the avera of Adam HaRishon. So then the question presents itself, the Sefer Paris Yosef in Parshas Shemini talks about this, that that's a strange way to be mechaper, because normally we have the idea of Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor, that if somebody committed an Avera, so then he's not going to be able to use that Avera in his defense. So on Yom Kippur, we don't wear gold because we're not able to undo an Avera with the image of an Avera. So why don't we say here also that the Esrog is a poor way to try to atone for the aveira that involved in Esrog. So he suggests it's because Sukkot is the time of Tshuva Me'ava. It's a time when we are able to activate the more powerful tshuva that actually turns our aveiros into mitzvos. Therefore, yes, so the aveira of eating the esrog is now being atoned for through bringing the esrog for ritzui. So we have this theme of tshuva me'avo, which may particularly tie into the parsha, but this may essentially be a source for the idea that that's accomplished through Talmud Torah. And that Talmud Torah is a way of bridging the gap. The moment the Rambam describes in Hilchos Tshuva, when somebody has committed aveiros, so he's created a distance between him and God, and Tshuva is a way of trying to correct that, of trying to come back. So you can try to undo the aveiro, or you can try to bridge the gap by seeking out HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wisdom. And that's also a path towards Tshuva, by creating a bridge over this void that had been formed through the Avera. So here, if that's what the Gemara is understanding in this Pasuk, in Teitiv Se'es, so then Talmud Torah is effective on this level. So there is a story, it's quoted in the name of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that he was asked, he was challenged, now, there was a whole machlokus in his day that he had started the Musar movement. So the whole idea of focusing very carefully on one's path to tshuva through intentional efforts of study. So a big part of the objection, all the yeshivas that were not into Musar, is that we're learning Torah all day, and that's what we're supposed to do. That's effective to make somebody stay on the right path, and you don't need this Musar. So his response to that was that it's true that we have these sources in Chazal that Talmud Torah is the path to fight the Yetzirah, is the path to Tshuva, etc. But there's different types. So he compared it to Torah in general. So that's like a refuah segulis. That's like a segula. So it's supposed to help, but we don't know exactly how it helps. It helps in some kind of mysterious way. But Talmud Torah in the form of Musar, when you're actually taking on a intentional plan that's directed towards whatever midos need to be fixed, he says that's like a natural medicine. That's a real-world kind of medicine that addresses the actual symptoms through an actual treatment plan, and that's even more effective. So yes, it's true that Torah in general helps and has an effect here, but that's like a segula, and you could take on Musar, and that's going to be a more direct path. The segula, others explain, it's not just mysterious. It's that the idea that when somebody is involved in Torah study, so then that's supposed to increase his appreciation for Kedusha, for holiness as a whole. And if that's the case, so then hopefully that should keep him farther away from Averis, because he's generally a holier person. Like the Gemara says in Brachos, that Imra Tamar Chacham Sha'avar Avera Balayla Al Tahar Acher of Bayom, you see a Tamar Chacham who committed an Avera at night, so the next day you shouldn't think badly about him, but you should assume that he did tshuva, shema asa tshuva. In other words, shema asa tshuva, elevada asa tshuva. You can rely that he did tshuva. So the cynical interpretation, they say, shema asa tshuva, elevada asa tshuva. Tamar Chacham definitely wrote a tshuva saying it was mutter, so you shouldn't think badly about him. But the less cynical interpretation is that, no, that even though he's human and he could do averis, because but as somebody who is connected to the holiness of learning, he's not going to stay in that state. He's going to do tshuva. He's going to seek to repent. That's something we can be confident in, that will happen. And therefore, that's the proper path. So yes, the exposure to Kedusha itself has an impact, and that can create a different attitude and a desire to stay far away from sin. But Rabbi Yisrael was saying that the more direct involvement in the specific areas that need to be fixed in a targeted kind of way, so that's even more effective, and that's a remedy that's essentially natural and scientifically backed up, and it's not just the skula type that comes from the general Talmud Torah. There is a similar approach if you read some of the Haskamas to the Sefer Chafetz Chaim. So some of them point out that it's good that the Chafetz Chaim is writing this sefer, because the Gemara in Erchin says that Talmud Torah is a corrective for Lashon Hara, but they note that unfortunately we're all aware that there are Talmidei Chachamim who also speak a lot of Lashon Hara. So how do we understand that if the Gemara says that Talmud Torah is a way to fix Lashon Hara? So how come there are Talmidei Chachamim who still engage in this behavior? So they suggest that it means that you have to have Talmud Torah that is targeted. It's not just general Talmud Torah is going to have this effect, but Talmud Torah that helps one really appreciate the contours of this specific Avera and that help connect one to what exactly is wrong with this action. So then that's going to have a powerful effect, and that's going to make a big difference. And just to make one more point along these lines about the whole debate between Rabbi Shmuel Salanter and his opponents. So there's a story that's related, if I remember correctly, in Soloveitchik's book, Halachic Ben. Rabbi Soloveitchik relates the story that may have been about Reb Chaim, that Reb Chaim engaged in a back and forth with, I believe it was Reb Itzla Petterberger, who was one of the great Talmidim of Rabbi Saul Salanter, and they argued about the Gemara and Daf Hei in Maseches Brachos, because there the Gemara says that La'olam Yargiz Adam Yetzer Tov Al Yetzer Hara, that person should always try to fight against his Yetzer Hara. And the Gemara has a whole list of steps that one should try to fight it through Torah study. And if that doesn't work, then one should say Kriya Shema. And if that doesn't work, Yazkir Yom HaMisa. You take this very scary, introspective attitude and realize that you're going to die, and that should set you straight. So they had an argument that Bitzel was maintaining that you see that the most effective step is Yazkir Yom HaMisa, this very intense introspective process. So that's effective even when other things aren't effective, so therefore we should take on that path. And Reb Chaim said to him that no, that that's just saying that if things are extreme, so then that's what you'll have to do. But it's comparable to saying that, okay, if somebody wants to be healthy, so then he should eat healthy foods. And if that doesn't work, he's going to have to take medicine. And if that doesn't work, then he's going to have surgery. So should we say, okay, so surgery is apparently the most effective of all, so therefore everyone should just get surgery? No, he said, it means that if you get to this state where you're that sick, then you're going to need surgery. But if you're able to stay healthy with the less dramatic steps, so then that's better. So to hear the Gemara is saying that if you're healthy, so Talmud Torah will keep you on the right track, and it's only more extreme methods that are necessary for somebody who's not so healthy, so then he's going to have to be Mazkir Yom HaMisa. So it's possible to say that there really is a answer to reconcile these two. That when the Gemara says that Talmud Torah is the way to fight the Yetzer Hara, so all of these steps, Talmud Torah and Kriya Shema and Yom HaMisa, are all derived from a pasuk. The Gemara says, Rigzu, the pasuk that the Gemara quotes says, Rigzu v'al techdo, you should fight against the Yetzer Hara and you shouldn't sin. And it goes through various things you should do. One of them is Imru b'levavchem, that you should speak words of Torah, but the way it says it is b'levavchem, and that's striking. And some brought a raya from here that your Yotzei Talmud Torah even behirhur, that you should consider it a fulfillment of Talmud Torah even if you're just thinking about it. That's the pasuk here talking about Talmud Torah says Imru b'levavchem. But maybe we could add another interpretation that here, the way the Gemara is reading this pasuk to say that Talmud Torah is a way to fight the Yetzer Hara. So here they're having the whole debate, does it work, does it not work, does it work for everyone? So one could also argue that it depends how you do it, that it's not just Talmud Torah, but it's Imru B'Levavchem, that you have to learn in a way that has an impact on your heart, on the way you think. So sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't happen, and it takes a greater effort and intentionality and maybe focus to make sure that the learning you're doing is one that does speak to the heart. So maybe they're both right. So this Talmud Torah is the way, but a Talmud Torah that is able to have this effect, and maybe it depends on who you are, but we're able to learn in such a way that it goes into the heart, so then, yes, that's effective as fighting off the Yetzer Hara, and it's also a part of the process of tshuva after the fact. So as we see, that we shouldn't necessarily see Parshas Bereishis, we shouldn't at all see Parshas Bereishis as depressing or discouraging, having gone through this whole process of Yom Narayim and Tshuva, and then reading this Parsha, which seems to give all these discouraging messages about Tshuva. Quite the opposite. It's giving us the steps in order to be successful, and what we need to do to make sure that it's going to be a tshuva that's going to be effective and enduring, and also highlighting this theme of Talmud Torah, which itself makes the whole parasha relevant, because now that we are restarting the cycle of the Torah, and we had the great celebration of Simchas Torah to help us appreciate what's involved, and to help us recognize and to cherish the Torah, and to have an ahava for the Torah that should drive us to learn with more intensity and focus, so to appreciate just how much that is compatible in the continuation of the process of tshuva that has been so much on our mind these past 2 months. So to bring the connection to specifically Parshas Bereishis, but also more generally to the idea of eagerly and enthusiastically restarting the Torah, that should have an impact as well in bringing our tshuva to the next level and taking us to even higher planes of spiritual accomplishment. So hopefully hearing Parshas Bereishis, the Shabbos, will do that for us. Wish you all a wonderful Shabbos, an inspiring Shabbos Bereishis, and God willing, next week we'll talk about something else.